Hi everyone, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. Today is Tuesday, November 2nd, and we're going to be covering three news topics. One, the Texas law that virtually outlaws all abortions. The governor's race in Virginia, and Ice Cube's decision to forfeit $9 million because he refused to take the jab. We'll cover these three bits of news once we return from this message. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. We're going to jump right into our first news topic, which is Supreme Court conservatives sound skeptical about parts of Texas abortion law during oral arguments. The Supreme Court on Monday grappled with questions about the unprecedented structure of a Texas law that empowers private citizens to enforce a ban on most abortions after as early as 6 weeks of pregnancy. In oral arguments for lawsuits brought by the Biden administration and abortion providers that have been fast-tracked to the high court, some of the justices who had previously rejected a bid to block the Texas law signaled they were concerned about the way it was written. There's a loophole that's been exploited here, Justice Brett Kavanaugh noted, echoing liberal Justice Elena Kagan. He questioned whether the high court should broaden court precedent regarding federal cases against state officials to, in essence, close that loophole. Justice Amy Coney Barrett asked if the constitutional question posed by the law can even be fully aired due its structure and legislative text. The argument Monday were not about whether the Texas law violated Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the long-standing court ruling that bars states from banning abortion before fetal viability. Rather, the justices considered the issue whether the abortion providers and advocates in Texas and the Department of Justice have the ability to challenge the law in court. The petitioners both accused the Texas law, SB 8, of being designed to thwart attempts to challenge its legality by delegating enforcement away from state officials and into the hands of private citizens who are empowered to sue for at least $10,000 anyone who aid or abet an abortion. To allow Texas scheme to stand would provide a roadmap for other states to abrogate any decision of this court with which they disagree, said Center for Productive Rights attorney Mark Heron, who argued that the lawsuit challenging the abortion ban should be allowed to go forward. SB 8 was signed by Governor Greg Abbott in May, and it went into effect in September. It bans nearly all abortions in Texas by outlawing the procedure after detection of a fetal heartbeat, a point at which most women are still not aware that they are pregnant. The law contains an exemption for medical emergencies, but none for pregnancies resulting from rape or incest. The law's defenders argue that since the abortion law is not enforced by the state, they are not the ones who should defend it in court. The state has passed a law that gives them the option to sue, and then it has washed its hands of the matter, arguing Jonathan Mitchell, who is described as the architect of the Texas law. During the arguments of Texas Solicitor General Judge Stone, Kagan appeared openly hostile to the law, saying the entire purpose of SB 8 was to find a kink in the armor of court precedent regarding judicial review. The fact that after all these years, some geniuses come up with a way to evade that precedent and to even broader principle that states are not to nullify federal constitutional rights, and to say, oh, we're never seen this before, so we can't do anything about it. I guess I just don't understand the argument, Kagan said. It is unclear when the court will issue its decision. The justices agreed to hear both the Department of Justice and the abortion providers' lawsuits on an expedited basis while leaving SB 8 in effect in Texas. But the novel question posed by the law may not yield an expedited ruling. The justices on December 1st are set to hear arguments in another case, Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization, taking direct aim at Roe and Casey, the ruling that have upheld abortion rights for decades. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as soon as we come back from this short break, we're going to go over today's election, governor's race in Virginia. See you guys in a second. Peace. Hi, everyone. You're back on with Listen to L Boogie. We're going to jump right into our second piece of news concerning the governor's race in Virginia, which is pretty much deadlocked. McAuliffe, Democrats trying to ignite black turnout in deadlocked Virginia governor's race. Amid a deadlocked gubernatorial race in Virginia, a crucial statewide contest with plenty of national implications, longtime Democrat James Clyburn of South Carolina had a message for supporters as he campaigned with his party's nominee in the showdown with former Governor Terry McAuliffe. On Tuesday, people will be looking at it as a bellwether of what is to come. And I want Virginia to once again show the country the way to go, Clyburn, the third-ranked House Democrat, emphasized at a rally in Hampton, Virginia. The highest-ranked black lawmaker in Congress emphasized that the Virginia gubernatorial election is being looked at by people all over the country and from abroad as an indicator of what to look forward to next year. And I want Virginia to show us a glorious result. Clyburn was the latest high-profile black Democratic politician to join John McAuliffe on the campaign trail as the former governor faces off against GOP nominee Glenn Youngkin. Nearly all the latest public opinion polls indicate that the closely watched contest is a dead tie. Overwhelming support from black voters helped McAuliffe win election to the term as Virginia's governor in 2013. Soaring turnout by black voters also helped the Democrat convincingly win back the House of Representatives in the 2018 midterm elections and fueled President Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election. Democrats are hoping to repeat performances Tuesday in Virginia, a one-time battleground state that trended blue the past decade. Biden carried Virginia by 10 points last November, and Republicans haven't won statewide in the Commonwealth in a dozen years. McAuliffe facing what polls indicate as an enthusiasm gap among Democrats, including black voters, who are a key part of the party's base, is putting on a full court press to break through the perceived complacency. But some Democratic leaders and activists are concerned about a lag among black voters who may be politically spent after the bruising 2020 fight to defeat then-President Donald Trump. There's also concern that they may be frustrated with the current lack of progress on spending measures and a key voting rights bill by Biden and the Democrats who control both houses of Congress. I know I'm hearing from people at the doors that they are tired and they are so frustrated from COVID-19, the pandemic, the economic crisis, and more, former Virginia State Delegate Jennifer Curl Foy, who was runner-up to McAuliffe in June's Democratic gubernatorial primary, tweeted last month. While the Democrats have an uptick in recent weeks, they're still concerned about a softness in black voter turnout. McAuliffe has launched a late-game effort to light a fire under the party's base voters. "We ain't got time to be tired," former President Obama emphasized as he campaigned with McAuliffe at a rally 9 days ago in Richmond. "What is required is sustained effort." The nation's first black president, who remains very popular with Democratic voters nearly 5 years removed from the White House, said he understood voters are worn down from the nation's divisive politics as well as the strain of the coronavirus, the worst pandemic to strike the globe in a century, but pointing to Virginia's election, which political observers see as a bellwether ahead of next year's midterms, when the Democrats still try to hold on to the razor-thin majorities in Congress. Obama urged, "Don't sit this one out." Vice President Kamala Harris has campaigned for McAuliffe twice in recent weeks. "The race is tight," the vice president emphasized 2 weeks ago at a rally in voter-rich, highly diverse, and heavily Democratic D.C. suburbs of Northern Virginia. "And we got to make it clear, Virginia, that we're paying attention. We got to make it clear that we're not taking anything for granted." Voting rights advocate Stacey Abrams from Georgia, House Democrat leader who in 2018 made history as the first black female gubernatorial nominee of a major political party, has hit the Virginia campaign trail a couple of times in recent weeks to energize the Democratic base. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, Raphael Warnock of Georgia, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, and Democratic National Committee Chair Jamie Harrison also teamed up with McAuliffe. In addition, the McAuliffe campaign held hundreds of Souls to the Polls events the past couple of Sundays to bring black worshipers to early voting stations. But veteran Virginia-based GOP consultant Zach Rode argues that McAuliffe's push in recent weeks to increase black voter turnout is an admission of failure. "They need to be bailed out, and they're going to a constituency that has been there for them in the past," Rode told Fox News. "It's really an admission that of their strategy failure throughout the campaign, that they have not been able to build a winning coalition based off of the issues set that voters care about." The latest survey indicated McAuliffe overwhelmingly winning the black vote over Youngkin, a first-time candidate and former private equity CEO. But if Youngkin can make some gains around the margins, or if black voters turn out wanes, it would spell trouble for McCaffrey. USA Today, Suffolk University pollster David Palacios told Fox News last week that come election day, if the black vote is 20% of the total vote or higher, that puts McCaffrey in the driver's seat. If the black vote is between 16 and 18%, then Youngkin's poised to win. The pollster also pointed to a 1.8% support in his latest Virginia survey for third-party candidate Process Blanding, an African-American criminal justice reform activist who is on the ballot and as the candidate for the Liberal Party of Virginia. Blanding, 1.8%, is not enough to matter under normal circumstances, but because this race is polling so close, that 1.8% far exceeds the margin between the top two candidates, Palacios noted. Her presence on the ballot could impact the outcome. I will say this, and this is my personal opinion, this administration, the Congress, and Senate have failed its black constituents. They have failed. This president has made the best effort he could to ignore the black voters, which is the Democratic Party's constituents. He ignored the people that put him in office. He's done it from day one. He's catered to transgender. He's catered to immigrants. He's catered to Afghans. And he's catered to the LGBT community. His most recent show, and which is considered a spit in the face to black voters, is offering $450,000 apiece to migrants that illegally entered the country and were separated from their children. I mean, it's just so blatant that he cares absolutely nothing. Him, along with the both houses, care absolutely nothing about their black constituents in the Democratic Party, which is really their base. He's wants taxpayers to give $6.5 or $6.3 billion to settle Afghans in this country after the United States drew down their presence in Afghanistan and ended the Afghan war. He's given Asians $50 million, Asians and Pacific Islanders $50 million, and protections, hate crime protections. When statistics show, FBI statistics show, that their issue with hate crimes, their percentage of what's hate crimes against them is unchanged. But then there's an uptick in violence and hate crimes against black Americans. So the Congress and the Senate, they failed their black voters. They haven't passed the George Floyd Policing Act, not to mention the Emmett Till anti-lynching law. They have failed their constituents, but they want black people to continue to bail them out, keep them in power. For what? For what? Why? They always come to black voters to save them, to save America, to, you know, they come to us to save them, but we get nothing in return. We get spit in the face. The three things that I just mentioned that President Biden done for these other three or four groups, is a total spit in the face to black constituents. The only way they're going to learn, that the Democrat is going to learn to appreciate the black vote, is we take it. Is we take it from them. That's the only way they're going to learn. You don't miss your water till your well run dry. the well need to run dry in Virginia today. It needs to run dry at midterm elections next year. And in 2024, it needs to run dry even more for the presidential election. This president needs to be a one-term president. And the lack of the black vote is going to make this possible. Because there's no way in the world that black voters are going to continue to support a party that does absolutely nothing for them except give them excuses and lip service. That's all I have to say about that. Once we return, I'll be going over news concerning Ice Cube and he deciding to forego $9 million because he didn't want to take the jab. See you guys in a second. Peace. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're back on with Listen to Hell Boogie. We're going to go over our last bit of news concerning Ice Cube. Ice Cube refuses COVID vaccine and walks away from $9 million movie paycheck. Ice Cube reportedly backed out of a $9 million paycheck on a movie because he refused to get vaccinated for the coronavirus. The singer and actor was supposed to star opposite Jack Black in the comedy Oh Hell No. However, according to a report from the Hollywood Reporter, he decided he would rather step away from the project than comply with a production mandate to get the vaccine. The outlet reports that he initially agreed to be in Oh Hell No in June with the expectation that it would not shoot this winter in Hawaii with Kato Sakuri, the director behind Netflix's recent comedy Bad Trip. However, it's worth noting that production of the film was reportedly pushed back as a result of an injury that Black suffered while filming a bit for the final episode of Conan. Sources told the outlet that by walking away from the film, Ice Cube turned back his back on a $9 million payday. Representatives for Ice Cube, Jack Black, and Sony Pictures did not immediately respond to Fox's request for comment. While reports indicate the rapper's reluctance to get the vaccine, Rolling Stone noted that he's been a strong proponent of mask advocacy throughout the pandemic. He unveiled a brand of Check Yourself Before You Wreck Yourself t-shirt that featured him in a mask, a partnership done with the manufacturer Blackout, designed to benefit frontline workers. He was also thanked by Bacon College in August for donating PPE, including 2,000 face masks. Still, those combined sales were only half of what the three chains made in January 2020, according to the analysis. In July, The Wrap reported that several Hollywood unions and studio representatives reached a tentative agreement regarding COVID-19 safety protocols on the set, allowing productions to mandate vaccinations for cast and crew who operate in Zone A, where principal filming takes place. This includes cast members. As a result, actors are left with the decision of either get vaccinated or walk away from potential lucrative paydays. In fact, the National Board of SAG-AFTRA had previously approved similar guidelines that allow productions to mandate vaccines. Oh well, that's the end of that. Now, this mandate is, this is an issue. They're trying to force people, you know, they're waving, they're using money as a carrot, but Fortunately, you have stand-up guys like Ice Cube, who's really not going to be bullied by anybody. You know, he's proved that throughout his career as a rapper, West Coast, that he's just not going to be bullied. And that is important because it sets an example for others. You know, money, all money ain't good money. And evidently, he proved that. He turned down $9 million. You know, $9 million is $9 million worth of his freedom of choice. Just like women should have freedom of choice to choose whether they want to abort a pregnancy in a timely fashion, we as Americans, and I don't care what color, have a right to choose if we want to be vaccinated or not. Cases are going way down. Then you had press secretary this week that tested positive for the coronavirus, and she's been fully vaccinated. And I think I'm going to go over this story as a bonus session. No, this press secretary. Excuse me. Okay, so can we get this little information right here? Yes, we can. Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, has tested positive for coronavirus. Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, who earlier in the week said that she would not join President Biden on a diplomatic trip to Europe because of family emergency, said on Sunday that she had tested positive for the coronavirus. While I have not had close contact in person with the president or senior members of the White House staff since Wednesday, Ms. Psaki said, I am disclosing today's positive test out of an abundance of transparency. I last saw the president on Tuesday when we sat outside more than 6 feet apart and wore masks. Ms. Psaki said that members of her household had tested positive for the virus earlier in the week and quarantined once she learned that they had contracted the virus. She tested negative on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday and Saturday before testing positive on Sunday. Karen Jean Pierre, the White House principal deputy press secretary, traveled on the trip while Ms. Psaki stayed home and went into quarantine. Thanks to the vaccine, I have only experienced mild symptoms, which has enabled me to continue working from home, Psaki said. The White House did not immediately respond to questions about whether Ms. Psaki had received the booster shot and did not immediately identify the administration officials she had been in close contact with earlier in the week. Mr. Biden traveled abroad with a large delegation that included Jack Sullivan, his national security advisor, Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, and several press officials, all of whom have interacted with both White House officials and a large group of journalists traveling with the president. I will plan to return to work in person at the conclusion of my 10-day quarantine following a negative rapid test, Ms. Psaki said, which is an additional White House requirement beyond CDC guidelines, taken out of an abundance of caution. In July, after the White House staff member tested positive for the virus, Ms. Psaki warned that there would be more breakthrough cases and said that precautions were in place to protect the president. Okay. Notice how she said, yes, I tested positive even though I'm fully vaccinated, but the fact that I'm fully vaccinated caused her not to have, you know, severe symptoms. When you have people that contract the virus and don't even know it because they don't have any symptoms. So you can get vaccinated and get your booster, which they are starting to require. They're thinking about requiring a fourth booster shot when there's other countries that haven't even had their first, of the poorer countries or poorer nations that haven't even had their first shot, that, you know, citizens or inhabitants of other poor nations haven't even had one shot. But Americans and possibly richer countries are, they're getting their first two plus the booster. Now children they wanted children to get the shot. I can't call the ages but off the top of my head, but they want kids to receive a fraction of what adults receive as far as the vaccine is concerned. They're not going to be, you know, receive the same high dose that adults receive, but they receive probably maybe half or a quarter of what adults receive. But it's just a lot of questions. You still can get the virus, and, you know, just for the sake of argument, you can say that, yeah, if you get vaccinated and you do contract the disease, the virus, that it'll help you not experience severe symptoms. But at the same time, you got people who contracted the virus without being vaccinated and don't suffer from severe symptoms. So it's like a catch-22. And the things change all the time. But these mandates are an interruption. Now you have some frontline workers and you have a lot of police departments that have passed their deadline to receive their shot because they are concerned. And then you also have parents that are concerned and they're not going to inoculate their children right off because they're concerned. So it's a lot of concern. But the fact remains is we're hearing, you know, every so often about people that are fully vaccinated but still contract the virus. Jesse Jackson and his wife, they were fully vaccinated and they caught viruses. You know, so I don't know, man. It's crazy, but I just don't believe these mandates. And I never thought I would say this, but the Republicans got this one right. You know, they got this one right because, you know, and I agree with the Texas governor for not allowing mandates to go on in his state. I agree with him on that. Because people should have the right to choose if they want to be vaccinated or not. And I'm questioning the fact that you have certain people that aren't required to get it. All right. Yeah, Afghans that's entering the country, they aren't required to get vaccinated. You have members of Congress and the Senate, they aren't required to be vaccinated. So if they aren't, why aren't they required to be vaccinated? When you have people, you have a bunch of senators and a bunch of members of Congress, they congregate, they talk to each other and whatever. They aren't in danger of, passing the virus or contracting the virus. I don't understand why regular Americans are required to be vaccinated, you know, and he required companies with more than 100 employees to have their employees vaccinated or test them twice a week, but they are not even given employees options to be tested twice a week, I guess because of cost or whatever. So they're either requiring them to be vaccinated or not work. And it's the same thing going on movie sets. I think it's an app or organization that supply extras and on movie sets or whatever. And I get every so often, I get an email asking for me to throw my name in the hat for maybe a part as an extra or stand-in or whatever. But they are requiring you to be fully vaccinated in order to participate or be on a movie set, you know. So it's a lot. These mandates, you know, but this is what you have. When you, you know, when you don't really, you elect somebody, you don't really know what they're going to do. You know, it's, but it is what it is. But I just believe that people should have the right to choose if they want to be vaccinated or not. Well, that's all I have to say about that. That's going to end this episode of Listen to L Boogie. I hope you guys were fully informed as best as possible about these four news pieces, and I look forward to bringing you more content in the future. There's a mechanism when you click on to listen to this episode on my actual podcast page where you can send me a message. Click if you want to send me a message. Like, and subscribe to my channel. If you have anything you want me to cover, leave me a message. If you have any comments for or against, leave me a message. You also can donate, if you would, to the progress of my podcast. Now I can start to bring on guests. You know, some people want you to pay them for their time to be interviewed on any platform, and it would just enable me to broaden and make my podcast better. So do donate, do subscribe, and I am becoming more I am becoming better at posting content more often, because there's just so much going on in the news that something is happening every day. I actually could do a podcast every day about, you know, great and important news events, but I have time constraints also, so I will at least try to bring you guys 3 podcasts a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or 3 days in a 7-day period. Look forward to being with you guys again. Like I always say, be cool, love each other, and I'll see you next when God leaves his footprints in the sky. Peace.